This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Here is what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
We've put together 12 demands, which range from transport, accommodation, protective clothing, and also compensation of those who are really in the forefront, and a tax break during this time. If the president of our country does not accede to that, we do not see the reason why we need to continue encouraging our nurses and all our healthcare providers to go and commit suicide.
That's Lerato Madoma-Gova, president of South Africa's Young Nurses Trade Union, on the possibility of a strike. Details coming up also. Travel restrictions are hurting efforts to combat swarms of locusts ravaging crops in East Africa. These stories and more ahead on Africa News Tonight, but first our top story. One of South Africa's major nursing unions says thousands of its members will go on strike this week if the government doesn't agree to its demands, including the provision of personal protective equipment, or PPE. The union says many nurses are treating COVID-19 patients without gear, such as masks that could prevent them from being infected too. Darren Taylor reports.
The Young Nurses in Durban Trade Union says the government is underplaying the numbers of healthcare workers who have coronavirus.
Our biggest private group, which is Netcare, was exposed. Right now, they've got three of their hospitals closed down completely because their staff, more than even patient staff, were testing positive. It was just bad.
Lerato Madumo-Gova is the union's president. She says nurses and doctors are getting COVID-19 because they don't have protection from the virus. Instead of surgical N95 masks, says Madumo-Gova, they wrap cloth around their mouths. This doesn't prevent viral infection. She says most also don't have medical gowns, so they use plastic raincoats.
We've made so much noise about protective clothing. We've even released a member communique to say if there is no PPE, please do not endanger yourself.
But Madumo-Gova says nurses feel compelled to help patients despite any personal danger.
They still go and nurse COVID-19 patients with those bare minimum protective clothing, get into taxis because most of them they commute with public transport, go home, meet with people in the taxi and even put their families at risk. That is our biggest concern right now, that we might be thinking we are flattening the curve and we are dealing with COVID-19, and us, the frontliners, might be making it worse.
The health department has asked nurses to understand there are global shortages of PPE, and it's doing its best to get supplies. Frustrated by this response, the union has written to President Cyril Ramaphosa.
We've put together 12 demands, which range from transport, accommodation, protective clothing, and also compensation of those who are really in the forefront, and a tax break during this time. If the president of our country does not accede to that, we do not see the reason why we need to continue encouraging our nurses and all our healthcare providers to go and commit suicide.
The department says the Disaster Management Act prohibits nurses from striking. Madumo-Gova says that statement has angered healthcare workers.
They themselves have committed that crime. It is criminal for the department to not provide what is the basics.
We're in a situation now where thousands of people are infected with COVID-19. Many more will likely get the virus in the near future. Some will have to be hospitalized and cared for by nurses such as yourself. Is it not therefore extremely irresponsible to threaten a strike by nurses given this situation?
I would think it's more irresponsible for the government to ask soldiers to go into a battlefield and say, but we are not going to give you guns and we are not going to give you bulletproof vests. Just go, provide yourself with everything.
Health Minister Zweli Mkhize says any nurse who refuses to work during the pandemic may face criminal charges. Madumo Gova responds that her members consider that to be a minor risk compared with the danger of contracting COVID-19. So she adds, at this stage, the nurses' strike will begin soon.
This action is really a cry, and a genuine cry for help. The timing is not great, but I hope this will be circumvented by the positive response from the president.
Madumo Gova says the more healthcare workers become infected, the less chance that hospitals have of minimizing coronavirus fatalities. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
South Africa's hungry are rising up as the country marks a month of lockdown aimed at slowing down the spread of the deadly COVID-19. Looters are hitting supermarkets and smaller plaza shops. Police have also confirmed reports of food delivery vans being hijacked. In response to the deepening economic crisis, President Cyril Ramaphosa has announced a R$500 billion economic stimulus package that includes food relief. But Vicky Stark spoke to a volunteer in Cape Town who says the situation is so dire, they can't sit back and wait for government aid to arrive.
Ramaphosa said the aid package is aimed at helping the poor, including a temporary increase in social grants, as well as vouchers and food.
We recognize that food distribution capacity of the government is not adequate to meet the huge need that has arisen since the start of the epidemic. To fill the immediate need, the Department of Social Development has partnered with the Solidarity Fund, NGOs in our country, and community-based organizations to distribute 250,000 food parcels across the country over the next 2 weeks.
While looting and protests for food have taken place in several communities, Fadia Khamildin of the Kensington Factoryton Community Action Network says they're trying their best to feed people.
Our community is calm, but my fear is that we're going to have a food riot and people are going to want to get more food, and the need is just so great.
Khamildin says their area is a microcosm of South Africa, which has rich and poor. She says there are middle-class families along with backyard and informal settlement dwellers.
We wanted to see if this is an opportunity for us to bridge the divide between Kensington and Factoryton and have this neighbourly thing, help your neighbour. Because technically, if each one of us helped our neighbour, then we wouldn't have any issues.
They used the Department of Social Development's data on the area and also set up street committees to get information on each household. This allows them to know exactly what the need is. In less than 2 weeks, they've distributed over 670 food parcels that can keep a family of six going for up to 2 weeks.
The food parcels contents are like maximum 6 weeks lentils, dal, pulchers, sugar, tea, coffee, things that a family can make a quick meal from.
All the food is donated by private donors who either give in kind or in cash. Khamildin says it was helpful that a local mosque supported their project since they already had infrastructure for delivering food to the poor during Ramadan. But she says, very importantly, it's not just the haves who are helping.
So these are group of teenagers in the community who live in the poorest part of the community. Very rife gangsterism, fight over territory. I mean, Saturday night we're shooting all the time. So what we do is now we have these peace ambassadors. We have a meeting before the time. We do hand sanitizing and education. They live in these communities. They know the community. They are young people who want to change the look of Factoryton and Kensington and want to be inspirational.
She says the process has shown how vulnerable many people are.
I personally delivered three parcels to people on Saturday. One was a 90-year-old woman looking after a 70-year-old son. One was a 100-year-old granny who was living with her daughter and grandchildren. And one was an 89-year-old woman looking after a 56-year-old disabled niece.
Not having to deal with bureaucratic red tape, the Community Action Network can make things happen fast. They've even set up a helpline and serve cooked food to about 800 people every day. Khamildin, who's an occupational therapist by profession and has a passion for public health, says their entire operation takes social distancing and contamination into account. She says it's easy for someone who is removed from poverty to make lockdown regulations, but harder for people who are living on top of each other with no water and sanitation to abide by them.
I think the fault lines of our society, COVID is magnifying it. I don't think government has a solution to it.
She says, challenging as it is, she and the 60 other volunteers are trying to inject enthusiasm, which hopefully will make a difference.
We're making our community part of the solution. We're making these peace ambassadors. You want to be the leaders of the future? This is how you change the narrative in your country, in your city, in your suburb that you are living. This is how you are become a role model to others and inspire us and be part of the solution.
This is Vicky Stark for Voice of America News in Cape Town.
Travel restrictions meant to slow down the coronavirus are hurting efforts to combat swarms of locusts that are ravaging crops in East Africa. Experts say new swarms are emerging in the rainy season and warn that even larger swarms will emerge when countries such as Ethiopia begin the harvest, posing a serious threat to regional food security. Simon Marks reports from Addis Ababa.
A coalition of leading aid organizations will hold talks with emergency response and agriculture ministers from across the Horn of Africa next Tuesday, April 28. Their concern? The travel restrictions and curfews implemented by governments to stop the coronavirus and restricting access to rural areas impacted by newly formed locust swarms. Eight countries in East Africa, Djibouti, Eritrea, Ethiopia, Kenya, Somalia, South Sudan, Uganda and Tanzania, are dealing with locust infestations that are reducing crop yields. The current wave is of particular concern as locusts lay their eggs at the beginning of the rainy season. New swarms are expected to emerge just as the harvest begins in June and July. Aid organizations are scrambling to make sure there is enough food in rural areas to cope with shortages, especially if the coronavirus reaches more rural areas and access becomes even more restricted. Stephen Burak, coordinator for the Regional Desert Locust Alliance and project manager for ACTED, a humanitarian aid group, spoke to VOA via a messaging app.
In some circumstances, in some countries, that where the policies or where these measures are starting to be sort of taken on board, there have been limitations on humanitarian access. This is the perfect storm. What we're seeing is, as these long rains are starting, or through this long rains period of the coming months throughout the Horn of Africa, it's ideal time to see this upsurge with desert locusts. Now, as this upsurge occurs, you're also having the harvests. So while the harvests are prepared, we'll see them be greatly affected by this, by the number of locusts which have been swarming at that stage.
The UN's Food and Agriculture Organization says more than 20.2 million people are already facing food insecurity in Ethiopia, Somalia, South Sudan, Uganda and Tanzania. That number could easily grow with fast-moving locust swarms capable of completely stripping an area's vegetation. The FAO has 718,000 litres of chemical pesticides to control the spread of locusts. Two helicopters have also recently been delivered to Kenya for surveillance operations. Air spraying and surveillance exercises are already being carried out across 10 countries using 26 airplanes. Humanitarian groups are preparing for the worst imaginable outcome with coronavirus infecting people in rural areas while their crops are simultaneously being ravaged by locusts. John Shumlansky, country representative for Catholic Relief Services in Ethiopia, said via a messaging app that his organization was working to deliver food all over Ethiopia.
We're trying to get two rounds of food out as quickly as possible. That's about 51,000 metric tons, feeding 1.74 million people. We're just not sure what's going to happen. I mean, you know, there are restrictions. The government is allowing us to move stuff, to move our food and trucks and to get people into areas for distributions. But, you know, there aren't many cases in the rural areas, at least on record. But if that takes off, I mean, it could get really difficult for us. So we're in this mad rush now to get all this food moved as quickly as possible.
Many organizations working in areas infested by locusts say that even if the national government has given humanitarian groups the right to travel and deliver supplies, that message is simply not reaching local officials. Next week's meeting will address those concerns and attempt to convince ministers to make sure those operating in the field do not impede efforts to help the most vulnerable communities. Simon Marks for VOA News, Addis Ababa.
With national examinations looming in Zimbabwe, parents worry about a lost school time due to the coronavirus lockdown. Primary and secondary schools closed a week earlier than usual, and it is unclear when they will reopen. Colleges and universities also closed. Students are supposed to be learning online, but many don't have the necessary resources. Kutsai Musenge brings us the following report.
Like any parent whose child is at a critical stage in their school career, Rudoma Kamara is worried about grade 7 examinations that are a bridge to secondary school. Secondary school students normally have their ordinary and advanced level exams in June and from the end of October to qualify for university. Schools are supposed to reopen in the second week of May, but that is not certain. Makamore says government must consider postponing the grade 7 exams that start at the end of September.
I think it would be wise if exams are postponed to December so that they will be able to write their examinations without disturbances.
Tafadzwa Musika helps look after his sister's two children who are also supposed to take the important exams this year. Musika says the June exams in particular must be postponed so students have adequate time to prepare.
As children are at home, we as parents, we are trying very hard in every possible way that the children must study and also must prepare for the June exams, but it's different from when they are in school.
Some private schools have encouraged parents to buy their children mobile phones and laptops so they can learn online, but many cannot afford it. Children in rural areas with little or no internet access. President of the Amalgamated Rural Teachers Union of Zimbabwe, Obet Masaraure, says many teachers in rural schools have been using their own resources to teach via cheaper and more accessible social media.
We have made an intervention which is hinged on the commitment of our members who are teaching for free, using their own resources to secure data bundles, to teach learners using WhatsApp as the medium of communication. And it is now government responsibility to consider learning packages, especially for exam class learners.
Most tertiary students also cannot easily access online tutorials. The Higher Education Ministry urged their schools to offer lectures online. A university student who identified herself only as Tafadzwa says getting online is expensive.
We have online tutorials, but most of the time I tend to lose lectures because I cannot afford the required data. The moment I log in, data is used up. I think it's best for telecoms companies to review their data packages to meet our needs, just our needs as students.
University lecturer in economics and independent analyst Felix Chari says the country is still very far from adopting e-learning on a large scale, mainly due to economic problems.
Very few higher education institutions have equipped their instructors with the required skills and gadgets required to roll out e-learning programs. As a country, internet connectivity is still a huge challenge for most students who live in both rural and urban areas. Most students do not have suitable gadgets or money to acquire data bundles to access e-learning platforms. That has a direct impact on the way e-learning of any form can be rolled out in Zimbabwe.
Zimbabwe had one of the best education systems in the region, but years of economic decline have taken off its shine. Information Ministry Permanent Secretary Nick Mangwana recently acknowledged the problems that the lockdown presents to the education sector. He said government is working on comprehensive measures to address them. Reporting for VOA from Gweru, I am Kudzanai Musengi.
The Nigerian military says it has produced hand sanitizer that meet WHO standards as its contribution to the fight against the COVID-19 pandemic. It says its personnel are already using the sanitizer. Mike Mbonye reports from Lagos.
Colonel Laban Buba is the managing director of Nigerian Army Drugs Manufacturing Company. He calls the hand sanitizers its contribution to the fight against the COVID-19 pandemic. Buba says the Nigerian Chief of Army Staff approved the proposal to produce the sanitizers in record time.
As the managing director of the Nigerian Army Drug Manufacturing Company, I wrote a proposal to the Chief of Army Staff for us to commence the production of hand sanitizer, which is to produce the hand sanitizer for improvement of personal hygiene of members of the armed forces and their families. So the Chief of Army Staff saw the importance of the proposal I made. He approved funds for the production of the hand sanitizer within 24 hours of my submission of the proposal.
Buba says the company has produced 2 batches of hand sanitizer and distributed it to service personnel across the country. A 3rd batch is on the way. He says the company sent the product to Nigeria's National Agency for Food and Drug Administration and Control for approval for commercial use. Buba says if approved, the sanitizer will be easily accessible to the public.
Production of medical equipment, drugs, related devices, there are procedures. During emergency situation like this, you can only produce for internal use first. The processes of NAFDAC approval for commercialization is ongoing. So unless that is done, you cannot get it across to the open market.
The Nigerian Army Drugs Manufacturing Company was set up in 1994 and has produced medical supplies since 1998. Buba says the company also produces antibiotics, anti-malaria drugs, customized first aid kits, and other health care materials. The Nigerian military has also offered several of its hospitals for use as treatment centers for the pandemic. The military is also helping to ensure compliance to the lockdown to curb the spread of the virus. This is Mike Mbonye for VOA News in Lagos.
The notorious group that maimed civilians, abducted thousands of children, and killed unarmed villagers since 1987, the Lord Resistance Army, LRA, has resurfaced in South Sudan's Western Equatorial State. Local authorities and witnesses say the LRA killed 2 people and displaced scores of others last week in Duru, a village bordering the DRC. The rebel group disappeared from northern Uganda and South Sudan more than a decade ago, but has been suspected of operating in the DRC for years, committing massacres and other human rights abuses. A military spokesman for South Sudan says the reappearance of the LRA poses a major security threat, especially now when the country is trying to curb the spread of COVID-19. LRA leader Joseph Kony was indicted by the International Criminal Court in 2005. In December 2008, a joint force of Ugandan, Rwandan, and Congolese troops launched a major offensive against Kony, but he escaped and has remained at large. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. And on behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington, thanking you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bongo flavor to soukous, afrobeat to ndombolo and makossa to kwaito. The African beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the Sunny Side of Sports Monday through Friday at 1630 and 1830 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/Sunny. It's the Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.